today, these institutes are receiving more and more candidates from the young churches which they founded, while new missionary institutes have arisen in countries which previously only received missionaries, but are now also sending them. This is a praiseworthy trend which demonstrates the continuing validity and relevance of the specific missionary vocation of these institutes. They remain absolutely necessary. 133 Not only for missionary activity agents, in keeping with their tradition, but also for stirring up missionary fervor both in the churches of traditionally Christian countries, and in the younger churches. The special vocation of missionaries, for life, retains all its validity. It is the model of the church's missionary commitment, which always stands in need of radical and total self-giving, of new and bold endeavors. Therefore, the men and women missionaries, who have devoted their whole lives to bearing witness to the risen Lord among the nations, must not allow themselves to be daunted by doubts, misunderstanding, rejection, or persecution. They should revive the grace of their specific charism and courageously press on, preferring, in a spirit of faith, obedience, and communion with their pastors, to seek the lowliest and most demanding places. Diocesan priests for the universal mission. 67. As co-workers of the bishops, priests are called by virtue of the sacrament of orders to share in concern for the church's mission. The spiritual gift that priests have received in ordination prepares them not for any narrow and limited mission, but for the most universal and all-embracing mission of salvation to the end of the earth. For every priestly ministry shares in the universal scope of the mission that Christ entrusted to his apostles. 134 For this reason, the formation of candidates to the priesthood must aim at giving them the true Catholic spirit, whereby they will learn to transcend the bounds of their own diocese, country, or right, and come to the aid of the whole church, in readiness to preach the gospel anywhere. 135 All priests must have the mind and the heart of missionaries, open to the needs of the church and the world, with concern for those farthest away, and especially for the non-Christian groups in their own area. They should have at heart, in their prayers, and particularly at the Eucharistic sacrifice, the concern of the whole church for all of humanity. Especially in those areas where Christians are a minority, priests must be filled with special missionary zeal and commitment. The Lord entrusts to them not only the pastoral care of the Christian community, but also, and above all, the evangelization of those of their fellow citizens who do not belong to Christ's flock. Priests will not fail to make themselves readily available to the Holy Spirit and the bishop, to be sent to preach the gospel beyond the borders of their country. This will demand of them not only maturity in their vocation, but also an uncommon readiness to detach themselves from their own homeland, culture, and family, and a special ability to adapt to other cultures, with understanding and respect for them. 136. 68. In his encyclical Fidei Donum, Pope Pius XII, with prophetic insight, encouraged bishops to offer some of their priests for temporary service in the churches of Africa, and gave his approval to projects already existing for that purpose. 25 years later, I pointed out the striking newness of that encyclical, which surmounted the territorial dimension of priestly service in order to direct it toward the entire church. 137 Today it is clear how effective and fruitful this experience has been. Indeed, Fidei Donum priests are a unique sign of the bond of communion existing among the churches. They make a valuable contribution to the growth of needy ecclesial communities, while drawing from them freshness and liveliness of faith. Of course, the missionary service of the diocesan priest must conform to certain criteria and conditioning. The priest to be sent should be selected from among the most suitable candidates and should be duly prepared for the particular work that awaits them. 138 With an open and fraternal attitude, they should become part of the new setting of the church which welcomes them, and form one presbyterate with the local priests under the authority of the bishop. 139 I hope that a spirit of service will increase among the priests of the long-established churches, and that it will be fostered among priests of the churches of more recent origin. The Missionary Fruitfulness of Consecrated Life. 69. From the inexhaustible and manifold richness of the Spirit come the vocations of the Institutes of Consecrated Life, whose members, because of the dedication to the service of the Church deriving from their very consecration, have an obligation to play a special part in missionary activity in a manner appropriate to their institute. 140 History witnesses to the outstanding service rendered by religious families in the spread of the faith and the formation of new churches, from the ancient monastic institutions to the medieval orders, up to the more recent congregations. Echoing the counsel, I invite institutes of contemplative life to establish communities in the young churches so as to bear glorious witness among non-Christians to the majesty and love of God, as well as to unity in Christ. 141. This presence is beneficial throughout the non-Christian world, especially in those areas where religious traditions hold the contemplative life in great esteem for its asceticism and its search for the absolute. B. To institutes of active life, I would recommend the immense opportunities for works of charity, for the proclamation of the gospel, for Christian education, cultural endeavors, and solidarity with the poor and those suffering from discrimination, abandonment, and oppression. Whether they pursue a strictly missionary goal or not, such institutes should ask themselves how willing and able they are to broaden their action in order to extend God's kingdom. In recent times, many institutes have responded to this request, which I hope will be given even greater consideration and implementation for a more authentic service. The Church needs to make known the great gospel values of which she is the bearer. No one witnesses more effectively to these values, and those who profess the consecrated life in chastity, poverty, and obedience, in a total gift of self to God, and in complete readiness to serve humanity and society after the example of Christ. 142. 70. I extend a special word of appreciation to the missionary religious sisters, in whom virginity for the sick of the kingdom is transformed into a motherhood in the Spirit that is rich and fruitful. It is precisely the mission agents that offers them vast scope for the gift of self with love in a total and undivided manner. 143. The example and activity of women who through virginity are consecrated to love of God and neighbor, especially the very poor, are an indispensable evangelical sign among those peoples and cultures where women still have far to go on the way toward human promotion and liberation. It is my hope that many young Christian women will be attracted to giving themselves generously to Christ, and will draw strength and joy from their consecration in order to bear witness to Him among the peoples who do not know Him. All the laity are missionaries by baptism. 71. Recent popes have stressed the importance of the role of the laity in missionary activity. 144. In the exhortation Christi Fidelis Laici, I spoke explicitly of the Church's permanent mission of bringing the gospel to the multitudes, the millions and millions of men and women who, as yet, do not know Christ the Redeemer of humanity. 145. And of the responsibility of the lay faithful in this regard. The mission agents is incumbent upon the entire people of God, whereas the foundation of a new church requires the Eucharist, and hence the priestly ministry, missionary activity, which is carried out in a wide variety of ways, is the task of all the Christian faithful. It is clear that from the very origins of Christianity, the laity, as individuals, families, and entire communities, shared in spreading the faith. Pope Pius XII recalled this fact in his first encyclical, On the Missions, 146, in which he pointed out some instances of lay missions. In modern times, this active participation of laymen and women missionaries has not been lacking. How can we forget the important role played by women, their work in the family, in schools, in political, social and cultural life, and especially their teaching of Christian doctrine? Indeed, it is necessary to recognize, and it is a title of honor, that some churches owe their origins to the activity of laymen and women missionaries. The Second Vatican Council confirmed this tradition in its description of the missionary character of the entire people of God, and of the apostolate of the laity in particular, 147 emphasizing the specific contribution to missionary activity which they are called to make. 148 The need for all the faithful to share in this responsibility is not merely a matter of making the apostolate more effective, it is a right and duty based on their baptismal dignity, whereby the faithful participate, for their part, in the threefold mission of Christ as priest, prophet, and king. 149 Therefore, they are bound by the general obligation, and they have the right, whether as individuals or in associations, to strive so that the divine message of salvation may be known and accepted by all people throughout the world. This obligation is all the more insistent in circumstances in which only through them are people able to hear the gospel, and to know Christ. 150 Furthermore, because of their secular character, they especially are called to seek the kingdom of God by engaging in temporal affairs and ordering these in accordance with the will of God. 151. 72. The sphere in which lay people are present and active as missionaries is very extensive. Their own field is the vast and complicated world of politics, society, and economics. 152 On the local, national and international levels, within the church, there are various types of services, functions, ministries, and ways of promoting the Christian life. I call to mind, as a new development occurring in many churches in recent times, the rapid growth of ecclesial movements filled with missionary dynamism. When these movements humbly seek to become part of the life of local churches and are welcomed by bishops and priests within diocesan and parish structures, they represent a true gift of God both for new evangelization and for missionary activity properly so called. I therefore recommend that they be spread, and that they be used to give fresh energy, especially among young people, to the Christian life and to evangelization, within a pluralistic view of the ways in which Christians can associate and express themselves. Within missionary activity, the different forms of the lay apostolate should be held in esteem with respect for their nature and aims. Lay missionary associations, international Christian volunteer organizations, ecclesial movements, groups, and solidarities of different kinds, all these should be involved in the mission agents as cooperators with the local churches. In this way the growth of a mature and responsible laity will be fostered, a laity whom the younger churches are recognizing as an essential and undeniable element in the plantatio ecclesiae. 153. The work of catechists and the variety of ministries. 73. Among the laity who become evangelizers, catechists have a place of honor. The decree on the missionary activity of the church speaks of them as that army of catechists, both men and women, worthy of praise, to whom missionary work among the nations owes so much. Imbued with the apostolic spirit, they make a singular and absolutely necessary contribution to the spread of the faith and of the church by their strenuous efforts. 154 It is with good reason that the older and established churches committed to a new evangelization have increased the numbers of their catechists and intensified catechetical activity. But the term catechists belongs above all to the catechists in mission lands. Churches that are flourishing today would not have been built up without them. 155. Even with the extension of the services rendered by lay people both within and outside the church, there is always need for the ministry of catechists, a ministry with its own characteristics. Catechists are specialists, direct witnesses, and irreplaceable evangelizers, who, as I have often stated and experienced during my missionary journeys, represent the basic strength of Christian communities, especially in the young churches. The new code of canon law acknowledges the tasks, qualities, and qualifications of catechists. 156. However, it must not be forgotten that the work of catechists is becoming more and more difficult and demanding as a result of ecclesial and cultural changes. What the Council suggested is still valid today: a more careful doctrinal and pedagogical training, continuing spiritual and apostolic renewal, and the need to provide a decent standard of living and social security. 157. It is also important to make efforts to establish and support schools for catechists, which are to be approved by the episcopal conferences, and confer diplomas officially recognized by the latter. 158. 74. Besides catechists, mention must also be made of other ways of serving the Church and her mission, namely, other Church personnel, leaders of prayer, song, and liturgy, leaders of basic ecclesial communities and Bible study groups, those in charge of charitable works, administrators of church resources, leaders in the various forms of the apostolate, religion teachers in schools. All the members of the laity ought to devote a part of their time to the Church, living their faith authentically. The Congregation for the Evangelization of Peoples and Other Structures for Missionary Activity. 75. Leaders and agents of missionary pastoral activity should sense their unity within the communion which characterizes the mystical body. Christ prayed for this at the Last Supper, when he said, "Even as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me." John 17:21. The fruitfulness of missionary activity is to be found in this communion. But since the Church is also a communion which is visible and organic, her mission requires an external and ordered union between the various responsibilities and functions involved, in such a way that all the members may in harmony spend their energies for the building up of the Church. 159. To the congregation responsible for missionary activity it falls to direct and coordinate throughout the world the work of evangelizing peoples and of missionary cooperation, with due regard for the competence of the congregation for the Oriental churches. 160. Hence, its task is to recruit missionaries and distribute them in accordance with the more urgent needs of various regions, draw up an ordered plan of action, issue norms and directives, as well as principles which are appropriate for the work of evangelization, and assist in the initial stages of their work. 161. I can only confirm these wise directives in order to relaunch the mission at Gents. A center of outreach, direction, and coordination is needed, namely, the Congregation for the Evangelization of Peoples. I invite the episcopal conferences and their various bodies, the major superiors of orders, congregations, and institutes, as well as lay organizations involved in missionary activity, to cooperate faithfully with this dicastery, which has the authority necessary to plan and direct missionary activity and cooperation worldwide. The same congregation, which has behind it a long and illustrious history, is called to play a role of primary importance with regard to reflection and programs of action which the Church needs in order to be more decisively oriented toward the mission in its various forms. To this end, the congregation should maintain close relations with the other dicasteries of the Holy See, with the local churches and the various missionary forces, in an ecclesiology of communion in which the entire Church is missionary, but in which specific vocations and institutions for missionary work at Gents remains indispensable. The guiding and coordinating role of the Congregation for the Evangelization of Peoples remains very important in order to ensure a united effort in confronting great questions of common concern, with due regard for the competence proper to each authority and structure. 76. Episcopal conferences and their various groupings have great importance in directing and coordinating missionary activity on the national and regional levels. The Council asks them to confer together in dealing with more important questions and urgent problems, without, however, overlooking local differences. 162. And to consider the complex issue of enculturation. In fact, large-scale and regular activity is already taking place in this area, with visible results. It is an activity which must be intensified and better coordinated with that of other bodies of the same conferences, so that missionary concern will not be left to the care of only one sector or body, but will be shared by all. The bodies and institutions involved in missionary activity should join forces and initiatives as opportunity suggests, Conferences of major superiors should have the same concern in their own sphere, maintaining contact with episcopal conferences in accordance with established directives and norms, 163, and also having recourse to mixed commissions. 164 Also desirable are meetings and other forms of cooperation between the various missionary institutions, both in formation and study, 165 as well, as in the actual apostolate. Chapter 7, Cooperation and Missionary Activity. 77. Since they are members of the Church by virtue of their baptism, all Christians share responsibility for missionary activity. Missionary cooperation is the expression used to describe the sharing by communities and individual Christians in this right and duty. Missionary cooperation is rooted and lived, above all, in personal union with Christ. Only if we are united to Him, as the branches to the vine, cf. John 15:5, can we produce good fruit. Through holiness of life, every Christian can become a fruitful part of the Church's mission. The Second Vatican Council invited all to a profound interior renewal, so that having a lively awareness of their personal responsibility for the spreading of the gospel, they may play their part in missionary work among the nations. 166. Sharing in the universal mission therefore is not limited to certain specific activities, but is the sign of maturity in faith and of a Christian life that bears fruit. In this way, individual believers extend the reach of their charity and show concern for those both far and near. They pray for the missions and missionary vocations. They help missionaries and follow their work with interest, and when missionaries return, they welcome them with the same joy with which the first Christian communities heard from the apostles the marvelous things which God had wrought through their preaching, cf. Acts 14:27. Prayer and sacrifice for missionaries. 78. Among the forms of sharing, first place goes to spiritual cooperation through prayer, sacrifice, and the witness of Christian life. Prayer should accompany the journey of missionaries so that the proclamation of the word will be effective through God's grace. In his letters, St. Paul often asks the faithful to pray for him so that he might proclaim the gospel with confidence and conviction. Prayer needs to be accompanied by sacrifice, the redemptive value of suffering. Accepted and offered to God with love derives from the sacrifice of Christ himself, who calls the members of his mystical body to share in his sufferings, to complete them in their own flesh, cf. Colossians 1:24. The sacrifice of missionaries should be shared and accompanied by the sacrifices of all the faithful, either for urge those engaged in the pastoral care of the sick to teach them about the efficacy of suffering, and to encourage them to offer their sufferings to God for missionaries. By making such an offering, the sick themselves become missionaries, as emphasized by a number of movements which have sprung up among them and for them. The solemnity of Pentecost, the beginning of the Church's mission, is celebrated in some communities as a day of suffering for the missions. Here I am, Lord, I am ready. Send me, cf. Is 6:8-79. Cooperation is expressed above all by promoting missionary vocations. While acknowledging the validity of various ways of being involved in missionary activity, it is necessary at the same time to reaffirm that a full and lifelong commitment to the work of the missions holds pride of place, especially in missionary institutes and congregations. Promoting such vocations is at the heart of missionary cooperation. Preaching the gospel requires preachers. The harvest needs laborers. The mission is carried out above all by men and women who are consecrated for life to the work of the gospel and are prepared to go forth into the whole world to bring salvation. I wish to call to mind and to recommend this concern for missionary vocations. Conscious of the overall responsibility of Christians to contribute to missionary activity and to the development of poorer peoples, we must ask ourselves how it is that in some countries, while monetary contributions are on the increase, missionary vocations, which are the real measure of self-giving to one's brothers and sisters, are in danger of disappearing. Vocations to the priesthood and the consecrated life are a sure sign of the vitality of a church. 80. As I think of this serious problem, I appeal with great confidence and affection to families and to young people. Families, especially parents, should be conscious that they ought to offer a special contribution to the missionary cause of the Church by fostering missionary vocations among their sons and daughters. 167. An intense prayer life, a genuine sense of service to one's neighbor, and a generous participation in church activities provide families with conditions that favor vocations among young people. When parents are ready to allow one of their children to leave for the missions, when they have sought this grace from the Lord, He will repay them in joy on the day that their son or daughter hears His call. I ask young people themselves to listen to Christ's words, as He says to them what He once said to Simon Peter, and to Andrew, at the lakeside, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men," Matthew 4:19. May they have the courage to reply as Isaiah did, "Here am I, Lord, I am ready, send me," cf. 6:8. They will have a wonderful life ahead of them, and they will know the genuine joy of proclaiming the good news to brothers and sisters, whom they will lead on the way of salvation. It is more blessed to give than to receive, Acts 20:35. 81. The material and financial needs of the missions are many, not only to set up the church with minimal structures, chapels, schools for catechists and seminarians, housing, but also to support works of charity, education, and human promotion, a vast field of action especially in poorer countries. The missionary church gives what she receives and distributes to the poor the material goods that her materially richer sons and daughters generously put at her disposal. Here I wish to thank all those who make sacrifices and contribute to the work of the missions. Their sacrifices and sharing are indispensable for building up the church and for showing love. In the matter of material help, it is important to consider the spirit in which donations are made. For this we should reassess our own way of living. The missions ask not only for a contribution, but for a sharing in the work of preaching and charity toward the poor. All that we have received from God, life itself as well as material goods, does not belong to us, but is given to us for our use. Generosity in giving must always be enlightened and inspired by faith. Then we will truly be more blessed in giving than in receiving. World Mission Day, which seeks to heighten awareness of the missions, as well as to collect funds for them, is an important date in the life of the Church because it teaches how to give as an offering made to God in the Eucharistic celebration and for all the missions of the world. New forms of missionary cooperation. 82. Today, cooperation includes new forms, not only economic assistance, but also direct participation. New situations connected with the phenomenon of mobility demand from Christians an authentic missionary spirit. International tourism has now become a mass phenomenon. This is a positive development. If tourists maintain an attitude of respect and a desire for mutual cultural enrichment, avoiding ostentation and waste and seeking contact with other people. But Christians are expected above all to be aware of their obligation to bear witness always to their faith and love of Christ. First-hand knowledge of the missionary life and of new Christian communities also can be an enriching experience and can strengthen one's faith. Visiting the missions is commendable, especially on the part of young people who go there to serve and to gain an intense experience of the Christian life. Reasons of work nowadays bring many Christians from young communities to areas where Christianity is unknown and at times prohibited or persecuted. The same is true of members of the faithful from traditionally Christian countries who work for a time in non-Christian countries. These circumstances are certainly an opportunity to live the faith and to bear witness to it. In the early centuries, Christianity spread because Christians, traveling to or settling in regions where Christ had not yet been proclaimed, bore courageous witness to their faith and founded the first communities there. More numerous are the citizens of mission countries and followers of non-Christian religions who settle in other nations for reasons of study or work, or are forced to do so because of the political or economic situations in their native lands. The presence of these brothers and sisters in traditionally Christian countries is a challenge for the ecclesial communities, and a stimulus to hospitality, dialogue, service, sharing, witness, and direct proclamation. In Christian countries, communities and cultural groups are also forming which call for the mission agents and the local churches with the help of personnel from the immigrant's own countries and of returning missionaries should respond generously to these situations. Missionary cooperation can also involve leaders in politics, economics, culture, and journalism, as well as experts of the various international bodies. In the modern world, it is becoming increasingly difficult to determine geographical or cultural boundaries. There is an increasing interdependence between peoples, and this constitutes a stimulus for Christian witness and evangelization. Missionary promotion and formation among the people of God. 83. Missionary formation is the task of the local church, assisted by missionaries and their institutes, and by personnel from the young churches. This work must be seen not as peripheral but as central to the Christian life. Even for the new evangelization of Christian countries, the theme of the missions can prove very helpful. The witness of missionaries retains its appeal even for the non-practicing and non-believers, and it communicates Christian values. Particular churches should therefore make the promotion of the missions a key element in the normal pastoral activity of parishes, associations, and groups, especially youth groups. With this end in view, it is necessary to spread information through missionary publications and audiovisual aids. These play an important role in making known the life of the universal church and in voicing the experiences of missionaries and of the local churches in which they work. In those younger churches which are still not able to have a press and other means of their own, it is important that missionary institutes devote personnel and resources to these undertakings. Such formation is entrusted to priests and their associates, to educators and teachers, and to theologians, particularly those who teach in seminaries and centers for the laity. Theological training cannot and should not ignore the Church's universal mission, ecumenism, the study of the great religions and missiology. I recommend that such studies be undertaken especially in seminaries and in houses of formation for men and women religious, ensuring that some priests or other students specialize in the different fields of missiology. Activities aimed at promoting interest in the missions must always be geared to these specific goals, namely, informing and forming the people of God to share in the Church's universal mission, promoting vocations agents, and encouraging cooperation in the work of evangelization. It is not right to give an incomplete picture of missionary activity, as if it consisted principally in helping the poor, contributing to the liberation of the oppressed, promoting development, or defending human rights. The missionary church is certainly involved on these fronts, but her primary task lies elsewhere. The poor are hungry for God, not just for bread and freedom. Missionary activity must first of all bear witness to and proclaim salvation in Christ, and establish local churches which then become means of liberation in every sense. The primary responsibility of the Pontifical Mission Societies. 84. The leading role in this work of promotion belongs to the Pontifical Mission Societies, as I have often pointed out in my messages for World Mission Day. The four societies, Propagation of the Faith, Saint Peter the Apostle, Holy Childhood, and the Missionary Union, have the common purpose of fostering a universal missionary spirit among the people of God. The Missionary Union has as its immediate and specific purpose the promotion of missionary consciousness and formation among priests and men and women religious, who in turn will provide this consciousness and formation within the Christian communities. In addition, the Missionary Union seeks to promote the other societies, of which it is the soul. 168. This must be our motto: all the churches united for the conversion of the whole world. 169. Because they are under the auspices of the Pope and of the College of Bishops, these societies, also within the boundaries of the particular churches, rightly have the first place, since they are the means by which Catholics, from their very infancy are imbued with a genuinely universal and missionary spirit. They are also the means which ensure an effective collection of resources for the good of all the missions, in accordance with the needs of each one. 170. Another purpose of the missionary societies is the fostering of lifelong vocations agents in both the older and younger churches. I earnestly recommend that their promotional work be increasingly directed to this goal. In their activities, these societies depend at the worldwide level on the congregation for the evangelization of peoples. At the local level, they depend on the episcopal conferences and the bishops of individual churches in collaboration with existing promotional centers. They bring to the Catholic world that spirit of universality and of service to the Church's mission, without which authentic cooperation does not exist. Not only giving to the missions but receiving from them as well. 85. Cooperating in missionary activity means not just giving, but also receiving. All the particular churches, both young and old, are called to give and to receive in the context of their universal mission, and none should be closed to the needs of others. The Council states, by virtue of Catholicity, the individual parts bring their own gifts to the other parts, and to the whole Church, in such a way that the whole and individual parts grow greater through the mutual communication of all and their united efforts toward fullness in unity. Between the different parts of the Church, there are bonds of intimate communion with regard to spiritual riches, apostolic workers, and temporal assistance. 171. I exhort all the churches and the bishops, priests, religious, and members of the laity to be open to the Church's universality and to avoid every form of provincialism or exclusiveness or feelings of self-sufficiency. Local churches, although rooted in their own people and their own culture, must always maintain an effective sense of the universality of the faith, giving and receiving spiritual gifts, experiences of pastoral work in evangelization and initial proclamation, as well as personnel for the apostolate and material resources. The temptation to become isolated can be a strong one. The older churches, involved in new evangelization, may think that their mission is now at home, and thus they may risk slackening their drive toward the non-Christian world, begrudgingly conceding vocations to missionary institutes, religious congregations, or other particular churches. But it is by giving generously of what we have that we will receive. Already the young churches, many of which are blessed with an abundance of vocations, are in a position to send priests and men and women religious to the older churches. On the other hand, the young churches are concerned about their own identity, about enculturation, and about their freedom to grow independently of external influences, with the possible result that they close their doors to missionaries. To these churches I say, do not isolate yourselves, willingly accept missionaries and support from other churches, and do likewise throughout the world. Precisely because of the problems that concern you, you need to be in continuous contact with your brothers and sisters in the faith. With every legitimate means, seek to ensure recognition of the freedom to which you have a right, remembering that Christ's disciples must obey God rather than men, Acts 5:29. God is preparing a new springtime for the gospel. 86. If we look at today's world, we are struck by many negative factors that can lead to pessimism. But this feeling is unjustified. We have faith in God our Father and Lord, in His goodness and mercy. As the third millennium of the redemption draws near, God is preparing a great springtime for Christianity, and we can already see its first signs. In fact, both in the non-Christian world and in the traditionally Christian world, people are gradually drawing closer to gospel ideals and values, a development which the Church seeks to encourage. Today, in fact, there is a new consensus among peoples about these values: the rejection of violence and war, respect for the human person and for human rights, the desire for freedom, justice, and brotherhood, the surmounting of different forms of racism and nationalism, the affirmation of the dignity and role of women. Christian hope sustains us in committing ourselves fully to the new evangelization and to the worldwide mission, and leads us to pray as Jesus taught us, "Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Matthew 6:10. The number of those awaiting Christ is still immense. The human and cultural groups not yet reached by the gospel, or for whom the church is scarcely present, are so widespread as to require the uniting of all the church's resources. As she prepares to celebrate the Jubilee of the year 2000, the whole church is even more committed to a new missionary advent. We must increase our apostolic zeal to pass on to others the light and joy of the faith, and to this high ideal the whole people of God must be educated. We cannot be content when we consider the millions of our brothers and sisters, who like us have been redeemed by the blood of Christ, but who live in ignorance of the love of God. For each believer, as for the entire church, the missionary task must remain foremost, for it concerns the eternal destiny of humanity, and corresponds to God's mysterious and merciful plan. Chapter 8, Missionary Spirituality. 87. Missionary activity demands a specific spirituality, which applies in particular to all those whom God has called to be missionaries. Being led by the Spirit. This spirituality is expressed first of all by a life of complete docility to the Spirit. It commits us to being molded from within by the Spirit, so that we may become ever more like Christ. It is not possible to bear witness to Christ without reflecting His image, which is made alive in us by grace and the power of the Spirit. This docility then commits us to receive the gifts of fortitude and discernment, which are essential elements of missionary spirituality. An example of this is found with the apostles during the Master's public life. Despite their love for Him and their generous response to His call, they proved to be incapable of understanding His words and reluctant to follow Him along the path of suffering and humiliation. The Spirit transformed them into courageous witnesses to Christ and enlightened heralds of His word. It was the Spirit Himself who guided them along the difficult and new paths of mission. Today, as in the past, that mission is difficult and complex and demands the courage and light of the Spirit. We often experience the dramatic situation of the first Christian community, which witnessed unbelieving and hostile forces gathered together against the Lord and His anointed. Acts 4:26. Now, as then, we must pray that God will grant us boldness in preaching the gospel. We must ponder the mysterious ways of the Spirit and allow ourselves to be led by Him into all the truth. Cf. John 16:13. Living the mystery of Christ, the One who was sent. 88. An essential characteristic of missionary spirituality is intimate communion with Christ. We cannot understand or carry out the mission unless we refer it to Christ as the One who was sent to evangelize. Saint Paul describes Christ's attitude: "Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, though He was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied Himself, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form He humbled Himself, and became obedient unto death, even death on a cross." Phil 2:5-8. The mystery of the Incarnation and Redemption is thus described as a total self-emptying which leads Christ to experience fully the human condition and to accept totally the Father's plan. This is an emptying of a self which is permeated by love and expresses love. The mission follows the same path and leads to the foot of the cross. The missionary is required to renounce himself and everything that up to this point he considered as his own, and to make himself everything to everyone. 170. To this he does by a poverty which sets him free for the gospel, overcoming attachment to the people and things about him, so that he may become a brother to those to whom he is sent, and thus bring them Christ the Savior. This is the goal of missionary spirituality: to the weak I became weak, I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel. 1 Corinthians 9:22-23. It is precisely because he is sent that the missionary experiences the consoling presence of Christ, who is with him at every moment of life. "Do not be afraid, for I am with you," Acts 18:9-10, and who awaits him in the heart of every person, loving the church and humanity as Jesus did. 89. Missionary spirituality is also marked by apostolic charity, the charity of Christ, who came together into one the children of God, who are scattered abroad. John 11:52. Of the good shepherd, who knows his sheep, who searches them out and offers his life for them. Cf. John 10. Those who have the missionary spirit feel Christ's burning love for souls, and love the church as Christ did. The missionary is urged on by zeal for souls, a zeal inspired by Christ's own charity, which takes the form of concern, tenderness, compassion, openness, availability, and interest in people's problems. Jesus' love is very deep. He who knew what was in man, John 2:25, loved everyone by offering them redemption, and suffered when it was rejected. The missionary is a person of charity, in order to proclaim to all his brothers and sisters that they are loved by God and are capable of loving. He must show love toward all, giving his life for his neighbor. The missionary is the universal brother, bearing in himself the church's spirit, her openness to and interest in all peoples and individuals, especially the least and poorest of his brethren. As such, he overcomes barriers and divisions of race, caste, or ideology. He is a sign of God's love in the world, a love without exclusion or partiality. Finally, like Christ, he must love the church. Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, Ephesians 5:25. This love, even to the point of giving one's life, is a focal point for him. Only profound love for the church can sustain the missionary's zeal. His daily pressure, as Saint Paul says, is anxiety for all the churches, 2 Corinthians 11:28. For every missionary, fidelity to Christ cannot be separated from fidelity to the church. 173. The true missionary is the saint. 90. The call to mission derives, of its nature, from the call to holiness. A missionary is really such only if he commits himself to the way of holiness. Holiness must be called a fundamental presupposition and an irreplaceable condition for everyone in fulfilling the mission of salvation in the church. 174. The universal call to holiness is closely linked to the universal call to mission. Every member of the faithful is called to holiness and to mission. This was the earnest desire of the council, which hoped to be able to enlighten all people with the brightness of Christ, which gleams over the face of the church, by preaching the gospel to every creature. 175. The church's missionary spirituality is a journey toward holiness. The renewed impulse to the mission at Gents demands holy missionaries. It is not enough to update pastoral techniques, organize and coordinate ecclesial resources, or delve more deeply into the biblical and theological foundations of faith. What is needed is the encouragement of a new ardor for holiness among missionaries and throughout the Christian community, especially among those who work most closely with missionaries. 176. Dear brothers and sisters, let us remember the missionary enthusiasm of the first Christian communities. Despite the limited means of travel and communication in those times, the proclamation of the gospel quickly reached the ends of the earth, and this was the religion of a man who had died on a cross, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles. 1 Corinthians 1:23. Underlying this missionary dynamism was the holiness of the first Christians and the first communities. 91. I therefore address myself to the recently baptized members of the young communities and young churches. Today, you are the hope of this 2,000-year-old church of ours. Being young in faith, you must be like the first Christians and radiate enthusiasm and courage in generous devotion to God and neighbor. In a word, you must set yourselves on the path of holiness. Only thus can you be a sign of God in the world and relive in your own countries the missionary epoch of the early church. You will also be a leaven of missionary spirit for the older churches. For their part, missionaries should reflect on the duty of holiness required of them by the gift of their vocation, renew themselves in spirit day by day, and strive to update their doctrinal and pastoral formation. The missionary must be a contemplative in action. He finds answers to problems in the light of God's Word and in personal and community prayer. My contact with representatives of the non-Christian spiritual traditions, particularly those of Asia, has confirmed me in the view that the future of mission depends to a great extent on contemplation. Unless the missionary is a contemplative, he cannot proclaim Christ in a credible way. He is a witness to the experience of God, and must be able to say with the apostles, "That which we have looked upon concerning the word of life we proclaim also to you." 1 John 1:1-3. The missionary is a person of the Beatitudes,